WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is dedicated to bringing you the truth behind the news.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today is Friday, July 28th, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoo. In this episode, we're going to discuss why America has become so depraved. On Monday, we reported that a former New Hampshire state legislator was charged with child sexual exploitation. Former State Representative Stacey Marie Lawton is accused of having child pornography. The details of the case are very disturbing. The charging document says that Lawton conspired with his girlfriend to rape little children who attended the daycare where his girlfriend worked. His girlfriend, Lindsay Groves, is also charged with a federal crime of sexual exploitation of children. She's accused of taking nude photos of the children under her care and then sharing them. The charging document includes messages between these two so explicit and so disturbing, they're downright evil. As viewers can see, Lawton is a man pretending to be a woman, which is all the rage these days. The media celebrated him for being the first openly so-called trans woman elected to any state legislature. Lawton, of course, is not a woman, any more than I'm a cat if I were to go around meowing all the time. It wasn't too long ago that people like Lawton would have been pitied, shunned, or possibly committed. Today, Americans elect these people to positions of power. For those of you who've seen photos of Lawton dressed as a woman, you're probably not surprised that he'd want to rape children. If there were an ideal pedophile look, it would be Lawton's. But pedophiles don't have a look. They can look like anyone, and they have. Pedophilia has been on the rise for a long time, even before our country was hijacked by a coalition of deranged and mentally ill trans foot soldiers who do the bidding of a powerful and degenerate LGBTQ lobby that seeks to destroy what's left of American morality. In 2015, an FBI representative said pedophilia in America had reached an unprecedented and almost epidemic level. Before that, in the 1990s, the homosexual revolution had successfully browbeaten the American public into accepting that lifestyle as harmless as American apple pie. Of course, that was never the case. Various studies have concluded that there's a strong correlation between homosexuality and pedophilia. And before the homosexual revolution, America went through the sexual revolution of the 60s and 70s. Right now, there's a budding movement to destigmatize pedophilia. The first goal in the process will be to change the language. This is always how the revolutionaries start. Pay attention, because you'll begin to notice propaganda designed to stop you from using the word pedophilia. They're going to want you to call them minor attracted persons. Don't do it. Hold the line, and it's important that we tell the truth. There's a strong connection between child porn and pedophilia. So it's no coincidence that the child porn industry is one of the fastest growing criminal enterprises in the U.S. and in the world. The recently released blockbuster movie, Sound of Freedom, has brought attention to this despicable trend. According to the movie, which centers around the child rescue operations of former Department of Homeland Security agent Tim Ballard, more than 22 million images of child porn were posted in a single year. That was an increase of 5,000% over the previous 5 years. Ballard has said that America is the number one consumer of child pornography. So how in the world did we get here? How did we become so depraved? Well, some experts believe we wouldn't be here without the destructive work of a man named Alfred Kinsey. Kinsey was a sexologist known for inventing the theory that people were sexual from birth. In 1947, he founded the Institute for Sex Research at Indiana University. In 1948, he released his controversial book, Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, and then in 1953, he released Sexual Behavior in the Human Female. Dr. Judith Reisman, before passing, was the foremost expert on Kinsey. She authored the books Kinsey, Sex and Fraud, and Kinsey, Crimes and Consequences. She had devoted her life to exposing Kinsey and the impact of his so-called research. Here's Reisman talking to TNA's Alex Newman in 2020.
Not everybody at all knows who Kinsey is, but he changed every life, every single one of us. has had our lives impacted hugely by this guy and the pretense that he was a scientist. He was the most well-cited and still is the most well-cited so-called experts. All of the LGBTQ people, all of transgender, everybody says, this was our hero. This man put us on the map. NAMBLA, the North American Man-Boy Love, quote-unquote, association, had him on their website. I think they still do. I check every once in a while. In which they said, everything started with Dr. Kinsey. He had all these charts and graphs right in his, the most famous book in the world at the time. 1948, Sexual Behavior in the Human Male. 1953, Sexual Behavior in the Human Female. This began the move toward the sexual revolution.
And here's Reisman discussing Kinsey's influence on sex crime laws and sex education in schools.
Kinsey stepped in with his material, his claims that children are sexual from birth. Children are sexual from birth. Now, his position was that they have to have sex experiences because they won't be happy. The reason we had divorces, by the way, compare the divorces then to now in those years, was because people didn't know enough about sex. And so he's going to teach them about sex. Well, he says they have to be taught about, sex, masturbation, and intercourse to some extent. Anyway, it starts off mild, but conditioning being what it is, you start light, you start with light material, and you move your way out. And so little by little, he would expand, then CICUS does, Sex Information Council of the United States. And they begin to develop based on the science that comes out of Kinsey, which is coming out of those rapes of all those little babies and children.
When we come back, I'm going to be talking to investigative journalist William F. Jasper about Kinsey's diabolic experiments, the kind of people he used to get his data, and his possible connections to the CIA. But before we break, I wanted to tell you about the John Birch Society's Leadership Conference coming this September. This year, we'll be gathering in Des Moines, Iowa. We'll be discussing effective strategies that you can use in your activism, and we'll bring plenty of tools that you can take back home with you. This will also be a great opportunity for us to meet you and for you to meet like-minded patriots who are working to restore America. Our keynote speaker will be Dr. Ryan Cole, whose discussion topic will be the death of science, medical freedom, and an era of lies. James Patrick, the film director of the movie Nitrogen 2000, will also be there, and on Friday we'll be doing dinner and watching his movie. Former Iowa U.S. Congressman Steve King will join us as well, as will renowned physicist and election expert Dr. Douglas Frank. The New American's Alex Newman will be discussing how climate change is used to scare and control people. And that's just a brief summary of everything that will be happening over those 2 days. Visit jbs.org to learn more about the Leadership Conference. You can also get tickets online at jbs.org, or you can call and get them at 1-800-527-8721. But hurry up before the ticket window closes. Again, get your tickets at jbs.org or call 1-800-527-8721. Stay tuned, because you don't want to miss my interview with William F. Jasper.
The John Birch Society has been working tirelessly since 1958 to preserve freedom, safeguard the Constitution, and restore our God-given rights. We continually educate voters and lead the freedom movement. Join us as we work against a tyrannical one-world government. United as one, we can defeat this conspiracy against a free America. JBS founder Robert Welch said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Join us in restoring this great nation.
Welcome back, folks. Join me to discuss Alfred Kinsey and his role in making our nation so depraved is William Bill F. Jasper. Bill's an investigative journalist, a senior editor at the New American Magazine, and he's the author of the recent article titled "Normalizing Child Rape, the Decades-Long Kinsey-Rockefeller Playboy Push That Produced Our Current Pedophile Crisis." Hey, Bill, that's a mouthful in that title, man.
Well, glad to be back, Paul.
Right. So we left off with that where Judith over there is discussing the disturbing way that Kinsey got his so-called data. So do you want to start us off with that? Because we didn't mention that in the introduction. Obviously, we don't want you to go into too much detail, but I think it's important that people know how sick this man was.
Well, it is. It's vitally important. And as you pointed out in the intro appropriately, the new phenomenal blockbuster movie, Sound of Freedom, focuses on this exploding crisis of child sex trafficking. And it really goes back to, as I point out in my article, to Alfred Kinsey. Who was Dr. Alfred Kinsey? Very important. So I went to high school and college in the late 1960s, early 70s. Kinsey was cited in all our psychology books and everything that I had to study. And so his book, as you point out, Sexuality in the Human Male, came out in 47.
Was it 47, 48?
47, 48. His one, Sexual Practices in the Human Female came out in 53. So we're talking about 70 years, three generations, really, of people who have been steeped in Kinseyite propaganda, claiming that everything is sexualized and all sexual activity is normal. In fact, what we have here is one of the great scientific frauds, hoaxes of all time. And thanks to Dr. Judith Raisman, who unfortunately has passed on, we don't still have her here, but she spent over 30 years, probably close to 40 years of her life diving into Dr. Kinsey's fraud and exposing it, because it has had a devastating impact on our lives and all of our civilization. And we can get into some of the details of the fraud in his science, but there's no mistake. It's unequivocal that he was making up statistics, that he was using criminals from prison, sex perverts, and counting them as normal general population, and then extrapolating from that to say, well, 95% of American men engage in all kinds of sex perversions, so it's really normal, and our sexual mores and taboos and laws that we have governing these things need to be wiped away. And of course, he was given massive promotion in the major media and in academia, and so his philosophy, his perverted philosophy, has held sway and has changed our laws and our mores and our attitudes about so many things that are now devastating our whole society.
Well, he was also using data collected, so-called data collected by criminal pedophiles who were raping babies, right?
Right. And so that is one of the most shocking things about his research that, I mean, it's shocking that he did it, and it is shocking that it took so long for it to be exposed. And again, we go back to Dr. Judith Raisman. So where were all the psychologists, the statisticians, sociologists, jurists who were all taken up with his great research? Why didn't any of them dive down into it and ask some basic questions? He said, as Dr. Raisman pointed out, one of his great revelations was that human beings are sexual from birth, that children are sexual beings, and so they have to be sexually liberated, and it's a good thing for them to engage in sex with adults. So how did he arrive at this? He actually had sex perverts, many of whom were in prison for their crimes against children, whom he was consulting, and then he had sex perverts who should have been in prison, mm-hmm. like Rex King, one of his most notorious examples, who was for 30, 40 years traveling around the country as a federal land surveyor, and he was abusing children. As young as 2 months, 5 months, 11 months, 5 years old. And then he was taking down in detail as he raped them and abused them in various ways. And then he claimed that their responses, and it's in his own writing, in his own notes, that, that many of them were violently shaking and all. He interpreted that as erotic arousal and orgasm and for infants. And Judith Reisman looked at that. She said, how can this be? This was illegal to do. How did Kinsey arrive at this data? And the most notorious example in his book of the sexual activity of human male was the children of table 34. And it goes down the table and shows all of these infants and how many times they had climax within so many minutes or within a minute. And so this was a self-indictment. This was blatant. And Rex King was not the only one. And it took decades until decades later when a British film company, Yorkshire TV, did an incredible documentary, Kinsey's Pedophiles, where many of the colleagues of Kinsey, who had by that time passed on, but Paul Gebhard, Wardell Pomeroy, Clarence Tripp, these people were interviewed, and many of them very forthrightly condemned themselves with admissions about their participation in this.
So can you go into how Rockefeller money paid played a role in funding Kinsey, and then maybe the connection that Reisman had made between Kinsey and the CIA?
Yes. Yeah, so there are many connections like this. So from the very beginning, as with so many other things that have been calamitous for our society, the Kinsey research was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. That's not a disputed allegation. It's there in the record, and the Rockefeller Foundation has tried to justify it over the years, particularly when they started getting called out on the pedophilia, the funding of that research. So the Rockefeller Foundation poured millions of dollars into this, and it wasn't only the money that they gave to Indiana University and to the Kinsey Institute, which was there. The Rockefeller Foundation and its orbit of influence in the media gave hundreds of millions of dollars more in terms of just favorable publicity in all of the major magazines and television networks of that time in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. Not only that, but as one might expect, Playboy, Penthouse, and Hustler, the premier smut magazines, porn magazines, Playboy being considered the more genteel soft porn magazine. Then it got more raunchy with Penthouse, and then even more raunchy with Hustler. All three of them were promoting pedophilia and incest. And Hugh Hefner, the founder of Playboy, multimillionaire, urbane gentleman, he popularized the idea that pornography is not only harmless but helpful, and he was one of the major funders after the Rockefeller Foundation of the Kinsey Institute, and it makes perfect sense. Instead of a lifelong helpmate, a wife whom you love and treasure, and you work together your whole lives, it's much easier to have a playmate of the month, change your playmates, as he did at his Playboy mansion all the time. And he sold that philosophy, and he in his in Playboy had cartoons and articles and images that promoted incest and pedophilia. And we know that because Dr. Judith Reisman, on a grant from during the Reagan administration, from the Department of Justice, conducted a study of tens of thousands of images through all three of those magazines, and found out that, yes, indeed, all of these magazines have been promoting pedophilia and incest.
Mm-hmm. What about Reisman's connection of Kinsey to the CIA?
Well, that's another very important part here, because She particularly focuses on a very controversial program known as MK Ultra. And of course, most people know that as the mind control experimental program of the CIA using LSD and using it on people without their informed consent. And then it got closed down at UCLA with the originators of it. But there was a connection with Kinsey. The Rockefeller Foundation, which funded Kinsey, was also big on promoting many of the CIA programs on the new psychology and sexual liberation. And the CIA was working in that program. So the connections are there, and that's still something that right at towards the end of her life, Dr. Reisman had delved into, and she had a lot more to come out on that.
Bill, what in the world do we do with all this information? I imagine there's a lot of, I wonder how many people know this, and what do we do with this going forward?
Well, far too few people understand that what we are seeing now with all of the perversions that are engulfing our society now. We see it with all the idiocy and confusion and chaos caused by the transgender movement, by all the gender ideology things, changing the language.
Do you think that's related to the work of Kinsey, would you say? Because I think
absolutely. Yeah, if we had time, we'd go into that in even more detail. We haven't reached the end of this continuum of perversion, though, because one of the things that that Kinsey promoted going beyond pedophilia, which people would think is the worst you can go, but he actually wanted to go even further, normalizing, legalizing bestiality, or bestiality, it's pronounced both ways. That is sex with animals. And a number of his colleagues, I believe Wardell Pomeroy, but also Clarence Tripp, who was his main photographer and sex partner and sexology associate for many years, very, very openly talked about his sex with dogs. They're promoting, of course, Rex King, his pedophile expert. They casually say, yeah, he had sex with men, women, children, animals, dogs, sheep, etc. And they think nothing wrong with that. In fact, one of Kinsey's, let me just read a quote that Kinsey wrote to a judge, because Kinsey was cited, as I point out in my article, he's cited thousands of times in all the state legislatures, in judicial proceedings and whatnot, as the expert on why we need to overturn laws, etc. But he said, he wrote a letter to a judge in a case, and he said, quote, there is no scientific justification for the definition of sex perversions, which are customarily made under the law. In non-inhibited societies and in non-inhibited portions of our own society, the so-called sex perversion are a regular part of behavior pattern. This statement applies to such things as homosexuality, group activities, meaning orgies, relations between individuals of diverse age, that's his way of saying adult-child sex, and animal intercourse, end quote. So he's saying none of these are perversions. He was a pansexualist, polymorphous perverse. So he believed that anything goes. If it feels good, do it. And he showed that in his own life. It ruined him physically as a person. He engaged in so many different weird
sexual
and destructive practices that he mutilated his own genitals. And this is the man who's been put up on a pedestal and held up as the epitome of science, when actually he is the antithesis of science. He should be completely repudiated, and everything, all references to him struck.
So anything else that people should do with this information? We got about 40 seconds.
Well, yes. So obviously, one of the most important things is to root out of your own attitudes these Kinseyite
ideas,
influences. And we have written a number of stories over the years on Judith Reisman and have quoted her, and she's written for the New American magazine. Come to the New American, look up those articles on our search thing. But then we have to cut off all the funding to these things.
Very important.
That's where we as a taxpayer come in. And we need to have our representatives, like they're doing now, having these investigative hearings. We need to investigate the pedophilia racket that's going on and all of the funding of these bogus science programs and courses that are normalizing and legitimizing this perversion.
That's such a great idea. Thank you, Bill Jasper. Thank you for your research. And we will see you next time we have you on, sir.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, that's all for our news segment today, folks. For more Truth Behind the News, make sure you get a subscription to The New American Magazine. You can do so online at thenewamerican.com. Or you can call our office at 800-727-8783, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 Central Time. And stay tuned, because we'll be right back with more New American TV.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
Just imagine if we have a constitutional convention, the number of people who will be unhappy and the number of people who say the results are not valid, and then they'll just ignore the entire Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution that usurp power and abuse the constitutional power that they ostensibly have.
If you can't enforce an existing piece of paper, how are you going to enforce a piece of paper that has a little more writing to it? In other words, it's been amended.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
What can you do to elect good representatives and senators in your state legislature who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand?
As I was looking at the material and the books and the websites on sex education, I discovered that they're telling kids that not everyone is male or female, that there are many other possibilities, that sex is on a spectrum.
Hello, everyone. This is Veronica Kirilenko of the New American Magazine. Last month, Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra declared that his department is going on the offensive on gay and transgender rights. Take a listen.
Happy Pride Month. I hope you have all had an opportunity to not just enjoy June and what it stands for, but have had a chance to actually march, to stand up, to do the things that this month is supposed to stand for, and have an opportunity to remind people that there will be more. And that's why our summit's theme is so important. It's not just protecting what we have, but it's expecting much more. And I hope that's why we're here, because this game of defense can get tiring. We want offense. We want offense.
You know, we often say that gender-affirming care is health care. Gender-affirming care is mental health care, and gender-affirming care is literally suicide prevention care.
Commemorating the first ever Summer of Pride observed by the HHS, Assistant Secretary Rachel Levine focused on gender-confused children and alluded that if they are not provided with irreversible medical interventions, they will die. This is what parents across the nation are told, but is it true? Today, it's my honor to speak with Dr. Miriam Grossman, a board-certified psychiatrist helping children, adolescents, and adults. Dr. Grossman is the author of 5 books, the most recent of which is titled Lost in Transnation, A Child Psychiatrist's Guide Out of the Madness. The doctor recently testified before the House of Representatives about youth gender dysphoria. Hopefully, the lawmakers took some notes. Dr. Grossman, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much, Veronica, for having me.
It's a pleasure. Doctor, let's start with your professional interest in psychiatric issues surrounding gender dysphoria. When did you start being alarmed about this matter as a clinician? And what were you seeing that triggered your concern?
Well, it happened actually quite a while ago. Mm-hmm. And the way that it happened was not because I saw any patients in my office who had the symptom whatsoever. It was actually because I was researching what is being taught to our children in sex education. Because at the time, I was working as a psychiatrist at UCLA. And I was a psychiatrist at the counseling center for students. So UCLA students only were my patients at that time. Now, I became alarmed at the numbers of patients that I had who had sexually transmitted infections. Okay, so they had herpes or, you know, genital warts, or perhaps they had had one or multiple abortions. I may have discovered that they were very worried about having HIV. And so I became alarmed and wanted to find out what these young people are being taught about sexual behavior. And so I dove into that. And as a sort of, this was just a sort of accidental discovery, that as I was looking at the material and the books and the websites on sex education, I discovered that they're telling kids that not everyone is male or female, that there are many other possibilities, that sex is on a spectrum, that sex is assigned at birth, and that it's part of a normal, you know, it's a variation of being human to experience yourself as being not what your body is, that there's nothing abnormal about wanting to live life as the opposite sex, you know, take hormones so that you appear as the opposite sex, have normal organs removed from your body. And this really, really alarmed me at that time as a child psychiatrist, because, you know, we know that to grow into a healthy adult, we want to have a strong identity, finding your place in life, finding a strong identity, who you are, where you came from, and where you're going is essential for normal, healthy development. Now, to introduce the idea to young kids, that there's a possibility that their bodies are wrong and that they were, you know, just randomly assigned male or female, that might be incorrect, that is a very dangerous idea to put into the minds of kids. Mm-hmm. And that's where I discovered it. I then wrote a book called You're Teaching My Child What, which came out in 2009. And there was a chapter there about gender, warning parents that their kids are taught this appalling material that is not based in science. First of all, we know science says, and common sense, that sex is established at conception. Okay, sex is established at conception. The sperm and the egg unite, and you have either, in you know, almost every case, you have a clear male or female. And that is permanent, and that is just something that is recognized at birth, if not before. And that's what I said in our Congress a few weeks ago. I testified in Congress on this point, on this issue, and I said, you know, sex is established at conception and recognized at birth or before. Now, The fact that this even needs to be said in our Congress is very troubling, I think.
It is very troubling. So let's discuss this central idea fed to children and adults regarding transgenderism that you just described, the belief that gender identity is more important than biological sex and that the two don't always correspond. So, well, this is the belief, right, of the transgenderism. This is not what's actually going on in real world. So this subjective identity where it's all exists, like you said, on the spectrum is not limited to male and female. And finally, the gender identity is fluid and can change throughout a lifetime. So what is the evidence that the objective biology of male and female trumps a subjective gender identity? Why is it more important? And why is it dangerous for children not to develop what you described as a stable identity?
Well, let me first mention that there are very rare individuals, one in tens of thousands of people, who do struggle with their sex and they reject their bodies are just not, they're very uncomfortable with their bodies. They have what's called gender dysphoria, but it is, or once was until recently, an extremely rare condition. So I do want to acknowledge that that exists. And that people do suffer from that, and it is can be a very debilitating disorder. On the other hand, we know that children who have this disorder, gender dysphoria, used to be called gender identity disorder, very, very rare. We know that the vast majority, if they are allowed to go through normal puberty, they will outgrow it, and they will be comfortable with their bodies. So I think it's important to just throw that in there as we're talking on this subject. Now, to respond to your question about the biology, so let's just review, you know, there's males and females have different chromosomes. A male has an X and a Y chromosome. A female has XX chromosomes, and that is in every single cell that has a nucleus. So it is in, you know, 99.99% of the trillions and trillions of cells in our bodies are all stamped, so to speak, male or female. And that's certainly true for every organ, the brain, the heart, the immune system, every system in the body. And in fact, it has a huge impact on that system, whether the cells are XX or XY. And you know, whether the body is levels of estrogen or testosterone, normal levels or not, all these things have a huge impact on health and disease. For example, if you have a woman who needs a kidney transplant, for example, it's best for her to get a transplant from another woman. Because every one of those cells in the transplanted kidney is going to be XX. If she gets a transplant from a male, every one of those cells is going to have a Y chromosome. And so it's more likely that her body will reject that kidney. So there are even, we can even speak about, you know, male and female hearts, kidneys, brains, you know, I'm not exaggerating here. It's a new specialty within medicine called gender-specific medicine. So it has the importance of whether one is biologically male or female is massive. And you can only, you know, if you're going to try and reject that and you're going to put a child on this path of hormone, you know, blocking normal puberty, which, by the way, puberty is not a disease, puberty is not a disorder. Kids need to go through puberty in order to become adults. And puberty does not only affect, you know, the obvious things such as a deeper voice and facial hair and breasts and, you know, where fat is distributed. It also impacts every other system of the body, including the brain. So in order to develop a mature adult brain, which is a brain that hopefully is going to be able to make decisions based on rational thinking and you know, considering options, you know, the pluses and the minuses, and, you know, what might be the, you know, if I drive 100 miles an hour, what might be the consequence of that? If I get a tattoo on my arm that's permanent and I'm only 15 years old, what might be the consequence of that? So, you know, we want the child to go through puberty, which, by the way, only ends in your middle 20s. And you want the child to develop a mature brain. The brain is changing massively during puberty. And in order for those changes to happen, a boy needs to have that surge of testosterone and a girl needs estrogen. Now, if we were having a debate right now, Veronica, and there was somebody who was promoting gender-affirming care, they would say to me, well, Dr. Grossman, but those kids can go through puberty because we just give them the opposite sex puberty. Okay, so we're going to pump the boy's body full of estrogen and other hormones that are going to be anti-male hormones. And we're going to pump a girl's body full of testosterone, and then they'll go through the puberty that they identify with. Well, you know, there's a lot of problems with that. You know, their bodies were not designed to have those hugely high, you could say even toxic levels of opposite sex hormones. We have never done studies on these kids that follow them year by year and follow their brain scans and their brain development and their emotional cognitive development. We've never done that. This is all based on one small study.
Really, just one. Because the HHS explicitly endorses gender-affirming care, which includes social affirmation, puberty blockers, hormone therapy, and of course, surgeries that are absolutely irreversible. And the department says that this approach improves the mental health and overall well-being of children and young people. And yet you're saying that they're basing their claims on just one study.
Absolutely. And Veronica, listen to this. A few days ago, there was an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal written by 21 experts from 9 different countries saying to the United States gender affirming care monopoly, saying, what are you doing? There's no evidence for what you are doing. These are experts from Sweden, Finland, Norway, Belgium, France, the United Kingdom. And they wrote this letter. It's astonishing that this is a very unusual situation for doctors to stand up and point out what other doctors are doing is simply wrong. And that's what they did.
You know, doctor, in the introduction of your book, you mentioned that in 2004, there were only 2 clinics worldwide dealing with exceedingly rare cases of gender dysphoria. But however, I looked up the gender mapping projects, which says that there are now over 400 clinics in North America alone. So this significant increase reflects the growing number of children being diagnosed with gender dysphoria each year. So all of a sudden, gender dysphoria, like you said, which was previously called gender identity disorder, right, implying that it's a mental disorder, appears to be spreading like an infectious disease. How do you explain this alarming trend?
Oh, yes. Yeah, certainly it is spreading like an infectious disease. And that is why it is called a social hysteria or a social contagion. This is when behaviors and beliefs can spread within a social group. And we've seen this before. We've seen it with eating disorders. We've seen it with suicidal behaviors. They can unfortunately spread in groups of peers, either in real life, friends at school, or online through social media, through the internet, on YouTube, and so on and so forth. And that's why in my book, another thing that I do for parents is I provide them with tools so that they can get control of their child's internet use. You have to do that. Parents, you've got to get control of your child's internet use, because I promise you, there are people on there that all they want to do is just get to your kid and indoctrinate your kid with this information and recruit them. I have story after story of kids who never heard of gender dysphoria, never had any kind of problem being a boy and a girl, but they found out about this stuff online. You know, there's different things that are going on, Discord and, you know, Reddit and YouTube and all these different social media places. And they are finding young people and also adults who are drawing them in, who are grooming them and telling them, you are transgender. And this is how you tell your parents. This is how you inform your parents. And if they don't, go along with it, then they're bad people and your home is not safe. This is evil. This is evil. This is placing a wedge between kids and their loving, devoted parents. And this is what I see day in and day out. And this is why I wrote the book. You know, I get emotional about it, Veronica, because I've just seen so many families suffer. And I've seen so many patients go through the irreversible medical changes. Girls are put into menopause. Young girls are in menopause. Girls have their breasts removed. Men, you know, it's just terrible stuff. And so I'm warning parents to please, and the book is not written for doctors or psychologists. Okay, it's not written, you know, for people with a PhD. Forget about the PhDs. This is written for everybody. Everybody can read what I have there. I include the basic biology that they need to know so that when their child, you know, so that when their child comes home and says, but being transgender is as common as having red hair. No, I give them, you know, the information that they need to understand about chromosomes, about male and female. So that from an early age, they can be the ones who educate their kids. You have to reach your kids before these activists do. They are waiting outside your door. I don't mean to be overly dramatic here, but they really do want to reach your child. And if you're not with the program, and if you don't believe this stuff, then you are ignorant and biased and transphobic people. And this is how families are torn apart and kids end up leaving their loving families because of this. They become convinced that their parents are bad people. So, you know, I'm raising a red flag here, but I'm also giving, this is a guide out of it. This is a guide for inoculating your family so that hopefully this agenda and this ideology doesn't even, you know, gain a foothold in your family. But if it has gained a foothold, I'm giving parents examples of like how you can talk to your child, how you talk to the pediatrician, conversations that you need to have at school, and so on. So that's the book. I'm going to hold it up. Lost in Trans Nation. I put my heart and my soul into it. I don't want to have any more families begging me for an appointment. I have way too many that I have to turn away. And I'm not the only therapist, obviously, that's doing this. There are, thank God, quite a lot of therapists right now. I mean, nowhere near a majority. Okay, a majority of therapists are either affirming, going along with it, or they're saying, I don't do this. I don't deal with gender dysphoria, go to a gender clinic, and they're just not touching this hot potato. But bottom line is that I wrote this book for parents. I want to save them from this catastrophe, and it is a catastrophe when your child makes this announcement.
You mentioned something very important. You know, there are numerous entities successfully promoting the acceptance of transgenderism, as you just described, and as you describe in your book. This include the government, the educational institutions, schools, medical professionals and organizations, the media, the entertainment industry. You mentioned Hollywood in your book, and social activists, groomers. So setting aside the obvious financial interests of pharmaceutical companies producing hormones and physicians performing surgeries, one might wonder if the enormous harm inflicted upon children and their families is intentional. Because you see, it is really difficult to believe that sheer greed can justify the extent of this evil, as you just called it. So what are your thoughts on this? Why are they doing this? What's their objective?
I mean, there is evil, but there are also people who are convinced that this is good. You know, the useful idiots is you know, what we, I think, in the past we used to call, you know, in communism and in you know, those tyrannies, those political tyrannies in the past, useful idiots from the West who really believed that it was all good and wonderful. So there are people who genuinely, including parents, you know, and teachers and professionals in mental health and medicine, who actually have been led to believe, they just believe the misinformation. They haven't dug into this. They are just blindly following, you know, they're blindly following their medical associations and the announcements and the policy that come out of their associations, and they don't realize that their association has been captured by this. They don't understand that if there's any attempt to dissent, if there's an attempt to write articles or stand up at a meeting, a medical meeting at one of these American Academy of Pediatrics or the Endocrine Society or the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. I write about it in my book. I was scared. I was scared in 2004, all the way back then. I attended a meeting of child psychiatrists, and they were already back then blaming society for a child who's confused about their identity, instead of saying this is a child who has emotional issues. And I raised my hand. I wanted to make a comment that I didn't think it was society. I thought it was the child. And you know what? I was scared. I put my hand down because I looked around and I saw that I was going to be the only one, you see.
But you are not the only one, not anymore.
No, absolutely not. I'm not at all the only one. There is an entire community of people that are speaking out against this. And some of them are really the giants. And I talk about, for example, Dr. Stephen Levine, who's been seeing, he's a psychiatrist, he's been seeing transgender individuals for 50 years.
Wow.
And he is firmly in the position and has been saying this for a long time, that we do have no evidence for medically transitioning these minors. We have no evidence for it. But unfortunately, his voice is silenced. His voice is squashed. So people like, you know, Admiral Dr. Rachel Levine stands up and says there's a medical consensus. Mm-hmm. That is outrageous. There is no medical consensus. There is a raging debate that's going on. And parents need to know that there's a debate before they go to their pediatrician, before they go into the gender clinic. Otherwise, they're going to be misinformed and they're going to be told to go down this dangerous path.
So do you see that the tide is turning on the issue of transgenderism and the people start to realize that it's just simply dangerous? It harms people, it harms little children, it harms their families and their parents. And like you said, there is just no scientific basis for mutilating children in the crusades to transition them and help them, because it's not helping anyone. So you see, I think that nearly half of American states have passed legislation or considering to pass legislation to ban transgender surgeries on minors. What do you think of that?
Well, I do agree with that. Although as a doctor, I don't like the idea of the government coming into my office and telling me what to do. I don't like that at all. But I mean, when there's something so egregious, when there's something so terrible that's going on, I mean, sterilizing. We are sterilizing these kids. So, you know, when there's something so terrible going on like this, then unfortunately, I do believe that, yeah, legislators have to start coming in and saying that this is not permissible. So I do agree with it. You know, it's a big battle over here. And the United States is an outlier. The United States and Canada, and maybe a few other countries, are outliers. Many countries now are turning around and recognizing that what they were doing in the past and giving young kids hormones and surgeries, there was no good evidence for that. And therefore they've stopped it and they're basically banning it outside of exceptional cases. So that is very positive. It's very positive. I mean, I was so happy to see that op-ed. By the way, I put it on my Twitter. People can follow me at Miriam_Grossman on Twitter. So I have that letter from the Wall Street Journal there in which, again, 21 experts from 9 countries are standing up and saying that the way that what we're doing here in the U.S. with our kids has no justification.
Dr. Grossman, I would like to thank you so much for your time today. So please tell us, what's the best way to follow you and your work, and where can we buy your book?
Anywhere that fine books are sold, at least so far. I haven't been banned. Hopefully I won't be banned. But even if you're banned, my publisher, Tony Lyons, he is a lion. He is a warrior for free speech, and he will make sure that my book is available. So please do order it. Again, it's a guidebook. It's a way to prevent disaster from hitting your families. And I have a website as well, which is MiriamGrossmanMD.com. A lot of good stuff to watch and to read on there. So please do follow me and go to my website.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. I'm Veronica Kirilenko with The New American Magazine.